Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
From travelling the Silk Road in Uzbekistan to crisscrossing Central Europe, train travel is having its moment. For more on this, we're joined by Barry Kenny, who we know from his day job in Irish Rail, but in his spare time also likes to holiday by rail, and on the line by travel writer Melanie May. Good morning to both of you. How are you?
Good, Philip. Thank you.
Good morning.
Busman's holiday doesn't really seem like the right term your specific circumstance. But tell me about the attraction of continuing your love affair with trains into your holiday time.
Well, it's a little bit of a byproduct. I won't say it's a travel specifically to take the train. But, I mean, I, of course, would promote the value of travelling by train in terms of seeing a country and seeing a little bit more of a country. So when there's the opportunity there, it's fantastic. And, you know, somewhere like Uzbekistan allows you to do this with a kind of quite an elegant loop of the country, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of fly into one city, out of another, and really capture an awful lot of it. And while, you know, its Silk Road cities are its absolute star and what it's famed for, you do just get that chunk of the country as well by travelling by rail through it.
The journey is the destination.
Absolutely. And obviously not only the journey, what you're seeing, but just the opportunity to meet people, either locals or fellow-minded tourists going along the way as well.
Because I have to say now, I have never gone on a train somewhere as exotic as that, but doing that crisscrossing of Central Europe by train, I learned more from the people that I met in a train carriage than I ever learned in any other circumstance. Is that the same? Was the level of English across Uzbekistan sufficient?
It was challenging. Obviously, you've got the tourist centres themselves where it's improving as you head further west. Probably a little bit more difficult. I was on a train carriage with people from Kazakhstan and Japan, and there was a lot of description, there was a lot of pointing, and then a lot of talking to each other and chuckling without actually recognising what the other person had said. But, like, you know, just a great kind of a way of meeting people from various countries along the way. Kind of like the old Interrail days, really, is the sense I got from it, there was an awful lot more night trains, but obviously they are coming back in Europe as well.
Give us your itinerary in brief, if you can.
Okay, flew to Tashkent via Istanbul. That's the capital, more modern city. It was destroyed by an earthquake in 1966, hence the Soviets rebuilt it. High-speed rail to Samarkand, which is the absolute jewel of the Silk Road, with the most famous monuments. Then high-speed to Bukhara, which is one of these kind of museum cities. It just feels so well-preserved. And then older kind of bone-shaker Soviet trains to Kiva in the very west, which is this very small but absolutely drop-dead stunning old Silk Road city.
Okay, high-speed, not bullet train high-speed.
No, not quite. 250 kilometres per hour they have on that side of it, and they're building it further, and they're linking up with the Chinese as well.
How much landscape do you get to see at 250 kilometres an hour?
Quite a lot, because when it's open desert, it feels like it moves around quite slowly.
And what are you doing for accommodation? Are you taking sleeper trains, or were you booking into places in each of these cities along the way?
Booking into guest houses, I'd say, again, as part of that, you know, that these really well-preserved old cities, you've got old buildings still in that style from the, you know, 14th, 15th century that have been converted into guest houses, beautiful, you know, gardens coming up as, doubling up as the restaurant area, little courtyards as well, and then steps from some of these absolutely stunning mosques and mausoleums that just seem to just punctuate the city's every corner you turn.
Melanie, Barry, God love him because he perhaps works for Irish Rail, likes to have a timetable governing his life. You're a little bit more freewheeling about your approach to using trains.
I don't book ahead of time at all. I just buy my ticket at the train station, rock up when I feel like I'm ready to depart, and take it from there. But that's the way I approach all of my travel. It just really suits me because I think it frees up my mind and it changes my perspective on things. I think if I had a train ticket booked, my day would be based around making sure I got to the train station at that time, Whereas when I feel like when I don't have a train ticket booked, I can just do what I want, see more of the destination, and then, you know, leave when I feel absolutely ready to.
Does it work all the time, though? Because I wonder, do you not occasionally end up, through a shortage of trains, end up with the equivalent of, I don't know, a day trip to Bray? I'm not doing down Bray, but it might not be the most exotic destination by rail in this country.
Maybe. I mean, it hasn't really happened to me like that. But then again, I guess I just love traveling so much that even if I ended up in some really small, tiny village in the middle of nowhere, I would be quite delighted with that. I thrive on the unexpected and change and not knowing what's going to happen.
So give us some examples. Where have you ended up?
Nowhere too unusual, to be honest. So especially in Europe anyways. And I did the whole Budapest to Bratislava to Vienna to Prague by train. And again, I didn't book any of these in advance, and they were so affordable when I walked up to the train station. And you can either just book it on the machine or there's always somebody there. And, you know, the train stations in Europe are, and most of the world actually, are so centrally located. And they're always stunning buildings, you know, because they were such a luxurious way of traveling, you know, years and years ago. So that you still get that kind of glamour and that relaxation around it. I've also gone, you know, the bullet train in Japan. That one I did have to book, because when you're a tourist, you actually have to pay in order to get the best value and not an extra fee on top. You have to buy the ticket outside of Japan. So there are some very touristy trains and really high demand, like seasonal trains, that you would have to pre-book. And the same maybe with the sleeper and overnight trains. But I just use the trains mostly where I go, just the way I would use buses.
Come back to the train stations again, because the point that you made about them being centrally located, as opposed to an airport that's 50 kilometres outside the city centre and takes another half a day to get into, you do arrive all around Europe, right smack bang in the middle of not just capital cities, but provincial cities too.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, an awful lot of people say that train stations are quite dodgy places. But actually, if you're on a budget, I don't find them dodgy. I think some people feel uncomfortable. There's a difference between being uncomfortable and unsafe. But that's where you're going to get the cheapest accommodation and some really great food as well, is around the train stations.
Talk to me about Central Asia and train stations. Mm. Were you doing what Melanie's doing in Central Europe, wandering around the train station and open-mouthed all at the architecture? Are they similarly impressive?
In some places are. I mean, there's quite modern buildings. Oddly, Uzbekistan, and quite unusually, does have them a little bit further out of the city centre.
Really?
Samarkand is quite ornate, and I think it's part of the kind of tourism product to introduce you to such an ornate city as well. But you take somewhere like Kiva station, it's about 10 kilometres from the station, the city proper. So it is a little bit outside. And that is unusual. I think most places you would find that it's right at the hub. It's easy to get transfers. But, you know, prices are cheap. Things like Yandex, which is the equivalent of Uber, is cheap getting in and out of the cities as well. And I would say that you can do the turn up and go on the rail service, but not for the high speed, because unfortunately, the likes of us and tour groups are just block booking them. So if you're booking that particular train, you literally have to have your eye on the day the tickets go on sale and nab it as quickly as possible.
One of the big ironies of being a tourist is that we spend an awful lot of time trying to get away from other tourists and places that are over-touristed. How touristed did you find this part of the world?
I think by European standards, not particularly. I mean, I had read that, you know, Samarkand was quite overrun. I think the scale of somewhere like Registan Square, which is this extraordinary, huge kind of central square with three, you know, almost they were trying to outdo each other in terms of the madrasas around it. And the space is such that you felt you could get a quiet nook and cranny. Khiva, which is to the west, which is a smaller city, did feel busier because you had a lot of tour buses coming through, kind of the equivalent of the cruise ship visiting. So you had the tour buses coming through. So it's narrow lanes, which when the tour buses had all gone, felt like a little bit more like an Indiana Jones type scene, could get quite crowded quite quickly. And they're putting their money into tourism. So it is going to get busier as we go along.
And you didn't step off a train and immediately bump into somebody in a Kerry or a Cork jersey, no?
I didn't know. Actually, I don't think I met another Irish person on that trip at all in any context.
How did you find the food?
Amazing. Now, I mean, it's not elaborate. Plov is the national dish, right?
You're going to say hearty here at
I
some
am,
point.
Absolutely.
Aren't you?
You're talking about mutton, rice, carrots in a kind of, you know, simmering in quite a degree of oil or whatever. But, you know, tasty, nothing elaborate. It's, you know, it's the old kind of peasant food type of thing. And the bread, I can still smell the aroma. And they just bake it on the side of the road in these cauldrons where you have women literally leaning into the cauldrons and slapping it against the side of the wall to bake. And it's just this lovely, crusty, crispy bread that goes with everything.
And that lasts and keeps fresh for days for
yes.
some reason.
Yes, yeah, about 10, 11 days. And there used to be central areas in the town, kind of only the odd one of these kind of brick cauldrons. And so people used to go along and you used to stamp your bread to identify it as it cooked in the cauldron or as the person did it for you so it could last onwards.
And how did your tummy do?
Fine, no issues.
No issues.
No Uzbeki belly at all.
Okay. Melanie, talk to me about actually getting to any of these destinations by train. Do you still favour flying to Budapest or wherever it is, or have you contemplated sailing and railing your way to Central and Eastern Europe?
Yeah, well, sailing and railing was a huge part of my life because I actually went to the UK for college. So I was so used to doing the whole train up to Holyhead or the bus up to Holyhead and then back over. I think, unfortunately, being stuck on an island as we are, it's flying is what we have to do to kind of get to where we're going. But if you are doing one of these, you know, if you're not just stuck to your 2 week holiday or a weekend away, you can, of course, there's so many ferries now to the UK, to France, to Spain, that you can just get on and then there you are. You don't have to bring the car. You don't have to worry about driving on the other side. And I do long term travel. And that is something that I would absolutely consider doing. Like I have traveled all through Europe and then come back on the ferry over from France. And it's just, it is such a relaxing way to travel as long as you pack light like I do and you don't have to carry your luggage with you. But of course, the train stations usually all have luggage lockers so that you can get in, yeah. leave your luggage there for the day, go off and then pick it up in the evening.
Yeah, British Rail don't make it a particularly attractive experience, particularly if you're holidaying, getting across the land bridge. But that experience of French Rail, much more attractive comparatively?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the train travel in Europe is absolutely brilliant. I really enjoy it. I even enjoy it in the UK as well. You know, you get to some great places. And I think it's such a relaxing way to travel. Looking out the window, you can walk around. It's incredible if you have children because they can burn off that energy by walking around. They're not stuck in their seats. You have tables. There's always a cafe. There's something nice, a little snack trolley. We all love a little snack. I just think it's a super way of traveling.
See, Barry Murphy is shrinking away and falling underneath the table here. British Rail, every time I have gone on it in recent years, I have gotten that sense of, oh God, broken Britain, they're just not investing in this country anymore. Have you anything to say in defence of your colleagues on that side of the water?
There was quite a lot of investment in the network and in fleet over time, and I suppose the growth that they experienced in passenger numbers actually was hugely significant up to and including COVID. They're going through a bit of a change at the moment, but there have been a lot of investment. I think the outlier that Britain is it's a good deal more expensive than most other countries for its rail service. So, you know, but with the ferries and look, we're Port Authority of Rosslare, you report. So obviously we've got to Cherbourg, to Bilbao, to other places. Okay. It does then allow you connect on to the rail networks in Europe also.
Barry Kenny, thank you very much. And also Melanie May, travel writer and broadcaster. Before we go today, let me say that there is going to obviously be a special edition of Arena on Radio 1 this evening, where Sean Rocks will be remembered by friends and by colleagues. That starts at 7 p.m. on Radio 1 and on the RT Radio app. It's going to be presented by our colleague Rick O'Shea. That's all that we have time for today. The programme was produced by Amy Ryan, researcher A.B. Philbin-Bowman, broadcast coordinator Ina Thacker, and on sound Liam Mullen.